Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby. Didn't take yourself all the game too seriously. This is episode 3 of our World Cup voyage. And I'm here with Tim. I am here with Tim. Fine, I'm good with Tim. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Hello, JB. Hello, Phil. Bonsoir.
Hello. Ah, bonsoir.
Yeah.
Hello, well, Tim.
Well, Tim in a van and Phil here.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
It was weird this time, just like on the last episode where I woke up in the Stade Velodrome car park, or I was in the Stade Velodrome car park when we spoke. Once again, I woke up there this morning and it was very weird because whereas on Sunday I was the only person in the car park, it didn't feel too weird. I was getting out like in pants to go and brush my teeth and there were people pulling into part of their car to go to work.
Of course, yeah.
Amazing.
Anyway, I've moved up the coast now to Cassis, which is where I'm calling you from, as I just sort of meander my way towards Nice.
Have you had any... Is it Crème de Cassis?
Crème de Cassis, blackcurrant liqueur, I believe.
I can't believe I didn't think to have some. I shall.
I think you should...
No, I probably won't, because I'm moving on tomorrow. I probably won't.
Well, hang on. Why don't... Every time... I mean, it could get expensive, this, but on your wage, no problem. Why don't you, at every town that you recognise as a drinks place, buy a bottle of something? That's a great. I mean, I don't know how you get it back. You'll have to post it, presumably, because you're not taking the camper.
That's dangerous. I've got 7 weeks to just have to have a free for all. Anything that's left on the like, World Cup final, you can come over to Paris and we'll just knock it all back in the van.
Do you know?
Amazing.
That because you're travelling around, Tim. That'd be a really good way of like sealing your memories of just buying a bottle everywhere that you are and posting it back.
Yeah,
I think that'd be amazing.
It would be cool, that. Because it wouldn't
that
be too...
is a really neat yeah. idea, Jay.
And yeah. then every time you've got guests around. So, do you know the history of the drinks globe?
No.
So, the history of the drinks globe, allegedly, is that gentlemen travellers would go to their club and they would congregate around the globe, open it up and drink, and then plan their next expedition. So, you would have all of your liquor in the corner. So, whereas the gentlemen used to tell each other about their past expeditions and future expeditions, you can talk about your past rugby tour.
Amazing.
And your next one to come.
I think that's a great idea.
Yep, I totally
agree.
That is
a neat idea.
There you go.
I'm completely taken with France. I've been to France before, but I've always preferred other countries above it in Europe. It's such a special country. It's amazing.
It is, isn't it? It is. I mean, even though it's
and
like...
I've softened on Marseille. I mean, I won't hurry back, but it's a lot better than it was 5 years ago.
Hurry back. High praise.
I wouldn't go again in off-season, put it that way. I'd like to give it a fair crack at the whip in high season. We owe it that, I think.
Yeah. I
no, we owe
really,
ourselves that.
Yeah.
Yeah, do I we? Think probably. Every villain needs a redemption arc, and I feel like Marseille has earned that shot at redemption.
I would go back to Nice anytime.
Did you notice the trams in Marseille run on tyres?
I can't recall that I
I didn't notice. That's the sort of thing that you notice, and I love you for it.
Yeah, yeah. They run on tyres. I thought, oh, that's unusual. And then I had to Wikipedia tram systems that run on tyres.
Mm. Yeah. Any other notable ones? On the world?
I think there's one in Canada.
It used to be the old trolley buses in the UK.
I can tell you this much. The widest gauge metro system is in San Francisco.
Really?
Very wide gauge metro system, yeah. Mm. I don't know why that is, but, you know. So, anyway, some rugby.
You're wasted talking about rugby, Jay.
Completely.
When's the tram pod coming out?
very, very soon. So here's something for you. Well, I'll kick off with this. We, and I think everybody else, were speaking about how this is the World Cup where there, more than ever, is going to be upsets, and more teams can win it than previous. And yet, it's turned out to be the most predictable World Cup to date so far.
Disappointingly, yes.
It is disappointing, isn't it?
I think, so Fiji could have gone upset. Georgia possibly could have gone upset. Some would argue that England wasn't upset.
Yes, okay, England, it's not a historic upset, but it's a present day upset.
Yes. And Chile, they'll be slightly disappointed with their discipline that led to a relatively comfortable win against Japan. Oh. But that game could have gone differently. I really think it could have done.
Do you know, the Chile game, up until the Wales game, that was the best game of the tournament. Did you watch it?
Yeah.
I thought it's absolutely superb.
Well, Chile are a team who like to play, and they're playing against a team in Japan who like to play. They like to throw it around and run it from anywhere when the time is right. So I thought it was a great game.
Yeah. Now, did you see the Chile game, Tim?
I saw bits and bobs of it. I have caught up with highlights, but yeah, you're right. Phil's right. It's real intent. And I just, the one bit I have seen was the clips of, because they were historic firsts, the Chile national anthem before their first game ever in a World Cup.
Yep.
And the first try scored by Chile at a World Cup. Just that those are some, you're right about the upsets not being there. And I am disappointed about that. And I don't, looking at this weekend, I don't see one happening.
No, not this weekend.
So, but you can celebrate these little moments, and that Chile, their first performance in the World Cup, irrespective of the result, was one of them. And Portugal, I know they've been in a World Cup before, but that'll be cool this weekend.
Of course, Portugal are in action. Well, just on Chile, I mean, they have some high quality players. I really like the hawker Diego Escobar. I thought Martin Segrin, however you say his name, is very good. And I thought the fullback, Aizala, can really play a bit.
The fullback was good. The 10, who is, I pointed out a few weeks ago,
Fernandez.
Rodrigo Fernandez, the man that scored the wonder try in the two-legged battle against the USA.
Yes.
And scored the first try in this. He's a lovely player.
Yeah, I didn't realise the score was actually so one-sided, because watching the game, it didn't feel like that.
Well, Japan scored two late tries in the last 10 minutes. So they scored 14 additional points in the last 10 minutes that made it a bit more one-sided.
Yeah. Now, I've had a thought about Chile. What does Chile teach us? And I think Chile and Fiji basically come to the sort of, well, I come to the same conclusion with both. Everybody talks about we need to give more international exposure to these tier two nations. They need to have more games, and to an extent, they're right. But if that's not on the table, it seems to me obvious that the next best option is to make sure they have club rugby. In fact, that might be even better. Because putting them together in a club and making them play in some tournament, whatever tournament that may be, and having that cohesion, I mean, you're not talking about 10 games a season. You're talking about 20 games or 30 games a season. And you look at what the Fijians did this weekend, I think that's the way forward for international rugby, which is have basically international teams playing together in some competition somewhere. I think the way that some sort of Pro 14 Rainbow Cup or whatever, the URC-style thing, and have a few of them around the globe, that seems to be a much better solution than just saying, right, we're going to get you from all corners of the earth, put you in international shirts, you'll have no time together, and then you have 10 international games, like they do for Georgia. I don't think it serves them well at all. If the Georgian team had a domestic team in Georgia with most of its players, they would be mega.
Well, they've got to be You can't have them just in Georgia. They've got to be playing in a European league or a comparative league.
Yeah, well, Chile's playing. I don't know what they're playing.
I put it out last week.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was. What was it?
Super Rugby Americas, SLAR.
I mean, I've never even heard of it, but it seems to produce a damn good team.
Well, the Cheltenham team, who the majority, 90% of that squad, not just 90% of the team, 90% of the squad, and maybe 7 out of 8 of the starting pack come from that team.
Yeah.
So they got to the final last year in 2022. The team that beat them last year and beat one of the Argentine teams this year, Peñarol, is the Uruguayan team. And we're going to see...
That makes sense.
We are going to see Uruguay this weekend. And my point last week was that I believe Argentina was strongest, and they're still a very, very strong team. But when 80% of the team were playing for the Jaguares against the Crusaders and against the Waratahs and against all those amazing Super Rugby teams, that's when Argentina was strongest. We'll see these two teams, Cheltenham, and this has propelled Chile to be the strongest, and Peñarol, which hopefully Uruguay take a step forward even from when they were where they were 4 years ago when they beat Fiji, we must remember. So I think you're right. I think this, and we've seen with the Fijian Drura
yep.
as well, I think a Georgian team competing in Europe, maybe they could join the Rainbow Cup slash
just
so URC.
Far away, isn't it? There's just no real good solution for them.
If the South African teams, many of them go via Dubai to get to Europe for 3 weeks, then it's not that much,
a Georgian team based in Dubai.
Yeah,
why not?
I mean, it's Tbilisi is probably only a 2-hour flight from Dubai.
Yeah, probably. Well, I mean, I'm not sure this is an option as things are at the moment politically. Of course, Russia could probably have two teams, but like we just can't really talk about them. But there is a suburb of Moscow, which basically produced the two lads at Sale, mm-hmm. plus some others. So they've got some. I don't know what it is or where. I tell you who would know that, Steve Diamond. Like he would legitimately know.
Yeah.
And then of course there's NSI. So you've got two teams that, I mean, mind you, I'm saying like, oh yeah, Russia's next door. We'll just pair up with Russia. It's probably further.
NSI, I bet you can get to Christchurch faster than you can get to NSI. That's like the furthest place on the planet.
Yeah, what am I talking about? That's a ridiculous idea. Oh, it's in Russia. It's fine. They'll just nip over or walk it. or the Romanian teams, maybe. Something like that.
Yeah, I'm very much for that. As long as you can make the money stack up. I think it pays for itself in terms of competition, long term, and cohesion.
Did you see the Martin Seguin yellow card?
Was that the head clash?
Good God! It just makes me rage.
Well,
it's just so unnecessary.
So, yes,
and I know.
Well, look, so I don't really like make them all red cards, make them all yellow cards, make them all play on rugby incidents. I don't really feel that strongly. Just make them consistent because we've now seen Tom Curry red card. We've seen the Chile one, which got referred to the bunker and was actually probably, there was less mitigation in that one than there was in the Tom Curry one, and that would stayed as a yellow card.
Yeah.
We've then got Jesse Creel in the South Africa-Scotland game.
No action taken.
A few minutes in, nothing. And I've seen at least three in the Wales-Fiji game that, again,
that was red, like not red cards, but high shots were prevalent in that.
Yeah,
nobody did anything.
Nothing at all.
Let the boys play.
So I really do what you want. Make whatever laws you want. Just apply them consistently. We talked a couple of weeks ago about the potential risks for the tournament and what could go wrong. And I think certainly Cocker and I flagged, I think all of us flagged that inconsistency, bad decisions. And inconsistent decisions are just going to be incredibly frustrating. And we've had one weekend and you've got 5 or 6 incidents, all of which have been dealt with differently.
Yeah, agreed. Now,
it was always the case. It was always the case, though. This is where I would just draw a distinction between this World Cup and previous World Cups. That was always the case. And I think fans accepted it. Well, you know, we can have a moan and stuff, but you kind of just get referees are human. Referees interpret things differently. That can happen in a game. But it's because they've introduced this bunker system, they've introduced the checks and balances. Actually, I think it feels like the referees are less accountable because ultimately the refs aren't making the decision. They're kind of just deferring it to someone else, someone in the ether who's just given a thumbs up or thumbs down.
Well, they're truly outraged. Sorry, go on.
So I'm with you, Tim. They're deferring it. And they're deferring it in two ways. They're deferring the stuff that they notice. And they said, oh, well, it's a yellow card and someone else can deal with that decision. But they're also, I think, probably unknowingly or subconsciously deferring other stuff. Because if they only half catch it, they don't need to do anything because they know their mate in the bunker is going to cover their backs. Except they're not doing, except everything's getting missed.
Yeah, and then fall back on, oh, well, the bunker missed it too, so it must not have happened. The one which really outraged me was Mateus Dittus. Now, this guy hit... who did he hit late?
Was this the low tackle?
Matsuda.
This was the low, like...
He tackled his thigh. And it went down a little bit. He fell down a little bit, and there's some accusation maybe he might have targeted the knee. Good! Like, good! Like, that's what you meant to do. Like, he's got his eyes... What do you want these guys to do? Right, he's committed to a tackle low. Right, so we saw a charge down. I can't remember who charged down who, but that resulted in a yellow card.
And Santiago Carreras.
That's it, right?
Or George Ford.
So you know, we can't have that. Okay, fine. What about if the player goes so low, he's looking at the floor when he commits, tackles the player's thigh, and gets a yellow card for it? I just do not, for the life of me, understand who is coming up with these laws. But you know. There we go. But actually, I think the story of this was how the two teams played. I really I thought the way that they played when they got the ball in hand was really, really nice. And Japan just stayed calm. I think it'd be very easy for them to panic that they're against a team they don't know anything about. They were under the cosh for the first... not really that much under the cosh, but they weren't behind. They certainly had to endure some offensive pressure. And in the end, they won quite comfortably. So... Mm. Fairly encouraging for them.
Yeah. Both teams will be... I think Chile will be disappointed they didn't put more points on the board. But for their first outing, it was positive for both sides.
Right.
Bigger games.
Games of equal stature right now.
Okay.
Do you want to go with South Africa, Scotland?
Should we do it sequentially?
Let's do South Africa, Scotland then. So, Tim, so far... Where did you watch this game? What were you doing?
I was in the top tier of the stadium, in the journalist box. Maybe two-thirds of the way up, halfway up. And I was just to the left of halfway, and I could just see the Kolonk mountain out the top of the stadium. That stadium is something else, I've got to say. The atmosphere it generates is incredible. And I absolutely loved... Well, no... I loved everything building up to the game, and it just kind of the energy went from the game pretty much after 50 minutes. But South Africa were very, very impressive. And just before I talk about the game, Siya Kolisi, oh my goodness, what a man.
Why so? What do you like about him?
Well, several reasons. There was a brilliant scene beforehand. He's such a great ambassador for the sport, and I think he recognises and takes the weight of it on his shoulders and actually, you know, willingly takes that load and actually behaves as though he is a massive ambassador for the sport. So just on, I love someone that belts out their national anthem like that. Alan Wynne-Jones loved him the same way. He could be tone deaf and flat. He will scream his national anthem at the top of his lungs. I love that. Secondly, the game had finished and I was doing a little video and I was doing some various bits and bobs. Most of the fans had gone, but there was like one thin layer of fans around the ground. I was like, oh, that's interesting. There, loads of South African fans have just stood there. Well, anyway, but all the other players have come out and seen family, friends, taken a few photos and gone back in. And then Siya Kolisi comes in and does a one-man lap. And take just photo.
That's amazing.
And he must have been doing that for a good half an hour. And I left before he'd finished. And then also, I just loved his little moment in the press conference. Was that today? Was that this morning? With when he sort of said, "No, I'd like to go back." Jack Leonardo was asked a question about Marnie Libok, and then they moved on. And he said, "Sorry, before we move on, I just want to go back." And he just said, "Look, Marnie Libok does some incredible things. Nobody's perfect at everything every day, but that's the great thing about this team." Is we share the load and we celebrate what we're great at and we help each other with the stuff we're not so great at. And it's only a little thing, but you just can't... Everything that man does is... I just find the guy incredible.
Okay, so that's really interesting because I'm glad I asked the question because I don't really get it, is the answer. And I don't get it because I guess you have to see him close up. So I'm glad you gave us that little report. Because sometimes I just think, is this something which we're meant to say without questioning it? Like, we just automatically meant to say Sia Khaleesi is inspirational, is an ambassador, and should never question it further. But I guess if you've experienced it firsthand, that's what you need to do to appreciate it.
Well, we've all three of us.
Yeah, I've got to say, I've met him. I was really impressed. But also, to be fair, I was really impressed with everyone.
Yeah, like, no, it's hard not to be impressed with those guys.
Actually, there was two guys I was not impressed with.
You're going to say who?
Yeah. Stephen Moore was a bit of an arsehole, quite frankly.
He was, wasn't he?
In fact, he's an absolute arsehole.
He was difficult.
Yeah, just miserable.
But, yeah, miserable is the right word.
Everybody else was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, who was Stephen Moore with? Because he was miserable too. Like, the pair of them, it's like a double act.
Stephen Moore was.
I didn't. I must have been doing something else when you were doing that. I don't remember meeting Stephen Moore.
Oh, we did an interview with him. Yeah. And... because he'd won something.
Most miserable man in the world.
Yeah, because we were interviewing as they came off. I can't even remember what it was.
But like, Sia Khaleesi was it was a pleasure to meet him.
Yeah,
it was also a pleasure to meet Jamie Roberts.
Jamie Roberts was ace.
And who is that? Scottish South African eight? He was class.
Scottish South African.
Oh, Zimbabwean. Dave.
No. As soon as you know, Munster. You'll know him immediately. Scottish, sorry, Irish.
Irish. Oh, CJ Sander.
All right, CJ Sander.
CJ Sander was ace. And the guy that got banned for drugs?
Yeah, a Pee Wee Deanty.
He was the most impressive guy that I met.
He was cool.
Yeah.
He was really cool.
So, that's very interesting, Tim. I like that.
Yeah. Very good.
Good first-hand knowledge. So, 50 minutes it all changed. I mean, we know what happened on the scoreboard, but it felt like that in the stadium too.
Yes, although what I would say is it felt inevitable that it wasn't. It was. I've used the analogy already, then I apologise. Oh no, if you haven't spoken to the South Africa game, I must have said it a few times. I've done various radio things. Anyway, they're like a boa constrictor, just squeezing the life out of Scotland from minute one, and eventually they killed them in minute 50.
Yeah, it did feel it felt inevitable, and early on there was Scotland got. In the first half, certainly, Scotland, the scrums were more even. Scotland did get a couple of scrum penalties.
Yeah, but, they were good. They were really good.
It started kind of falling apart a little bit.
Now, I think that is more to do with sort of the general mindset rather than being overpowered by the scrum. So, do you know when everything's just bouncing, it's going your way, like your tackles are sticking, getting off the line quicker, and then when it gets on top of you, that goes, doesn't it? So, I thought that Scotland were not just in this game, I thought they were poised to win it at half-time.
At half-time, I was... because they finished the half much, much stronger.
Yeah.
They'll be disappointed with that Darcy Graham break down the left-hand side. If he gives it... if he could have given it, I'm not certain he could have, but if he gets that into... Doohan's hands...
Yes.
That...
I thought Finn, whoever passed it, picked the wrong pass. Give it to Doohan.
Just give it him early.
Yeah, give it... because the chance of Doohan getting his hands free... is going to be much greater than anyone else getting their hands free.
It was a 3-on-1. It wasn't even a 2-on-1. It was a 3-on-1.
Did you have a guy on the inside as well? I can't even remember now.
No, there was two guys on the outside. Well, there was. I think it was Blair Kinghorn was kind of deeper and outside as well as Doohan. That was the obvious pass to give it to. But
you probably got a better view in the stadium because we had like
he absolutely butchered it. He absolutely butchered it. There's no getting around it. You can see what he was getting at the. It's one of those. He does it and it comes off and it looks great, but you get it wrong and you're an absolute dick of the day.
Yeah. But it was Libok that got across to him. So fair play to Libok for covering that ground and putting him down.
You just don't want to be in an arm wrestle with South Africa late on, do you? That's like the number one place you don't want to be. And had Scotland scored, I know I say this all the time, but it becomes a different game. And they didn't score. So, you know, they kind of got what they deserved. On the other hand, they did scrimmage well. They scrimmaged. And can I just talk about commentary a second? It's starting to really annoy me, this. They keep talking about things like it's an inevitability. Little things which you would never know until you play the game. Like, oh, well, Scotland, it's like Scotland have got no hope of dominating the scrum. So they're just going to hope for parity. Like, no, they're not. No, they're not. They're going to be good.
Well, they won a great, like, after 30 minutes or so, they won a great scrum penalty.
I have no problem if one of the analysts is like, right, I'm going to put my house on this happening. And it doesn't happen, fair play. Austin Healey's done that a few times, and it has happened. And you look really cool, right? But, yeah, I've got no problem with that. But don't say it to the watching public, like, oh, it's a foregone conclusion. Yeah, they'll just get battered in all the scrums, isn't it? You know, why bother playing the game, then? Like, why even bother?
Just on scrums, and bearing in mind we were talking about laws and stuff, it feels like we dial stuff up and dial stuff down in rugby way too much, and the sensitivity on some of the things that you get red cards for has just been dialed up. But like, if you really want to get pernickety and you really want to dig into the laws and apply them and stuff, just make and you want to make a good contest, make the scrum house feed straight. It's like it's odd where rugby kind of decides to pick its battles. Yeah, or completely ignore stuff.
That is getting ignored. I don't actually mind that game. But I've said this before, I would cheat. Like, if you're going to let it get away, you're going to let it happen, you've got to rewrite the law book somehow. Yeah. You've got to say,
yes,
okay,
you're absolutely right, Phil.
A feed close to your guy at a slight angle is fine. Because that's the lesser of two evils. If you put it right down the middle straight and both hookers can actually hook for it, then it's going to be an absolute mess of a contest.
Do you know what, though? Both hookers can't hook for it. Tim will tell you this, being a hooker. The position you're in is so bloody hard to strike an opposition ball. It's doable.
But
it's bloody hard.
If you were forced to put it down the middle at a straight angle, so it's equidistant from both hookers.
It's really hard. Because you think you've got... Usually,
you're standing on your leg is going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, sorry. In that situation, actually,
you have to swap legs.
Probably neither player can hook.
Do you know what? You do make a good point, which is like if it goes down straight, maybe hookers defensively need to use the other break foot. Maybe that's the answer. That is quite exciting, actually. Yeah, let's do that.
It would be a bit of a mess. You'd have to. I guess if you're going to want to make an omelette, you've got to break some eggs. If you're going to do that, there is going to be a lot of broken eggs.
Yes, there is.
I didn't mean to take us down that rabbit hole. I was quite disappointed with Scotland overall. I feel like we're kind of. I mean, there's two teams. There's two in the same way as we talked about Argentina being disappointing. You have to credit England the way they pressured them. You have to say, South Africa's defence was absolutely immense. The speed off the line to shut down Finn Russell's options.
I thought a lot of times they could have been caught offside. They were too fast for my liking.
What I was thinking, this is again where it's been brilliant being able to watch the from such a high up position, which I don't do rugby up in the gods, guys. But it's been awesome having that vantage point, because that was one thing I was like, my God, they're up quick. And I was checking like WhatsApp messages and stuff, and people were going, they've got to be offside. They really weren't. A couple of times they were, but every team, you know, pushes that boundary. But they clearly had a plan, and they just sent guys up, much like kind of London Irish did back in the day, and just to cut off Finn Russell's options passing to the wider channels. So he had to take the short option almost every time.
Do you know what I like about South Africa? The aspect of their game that I really like. And I think this is just a logical thing that they must be looking at. But if you think about physicality in rugby, there's a lot of ways to neuter physicality. So like the maul is obviously very physical, but it's not that that high collision contact, is it? And you think about defending. You obviously want to create massive collisions as defenders, but there's ways of countering that as a attacking team, change your angles, you run into space, all that nonsense, right? Where you cannot counter the physicality and where South Africa apply it beautifully is the ruck. My God, for like the first 30 minutes, I was fully aroused. It is just incredible the amount of violence that they bring to basically a phone box full of men, and they just plow into it over and over again. And it's almost unstoppable. Like, when they get two or three, if you don't protect that ruck, they steal your ball. If you do protect that ruck, you need your mate in immediately, because if you get caught by a couple of South Africans, they're not leaving you alone. They're just going to drive you off the ball, and then they're going to pick it up. And the amount of times that Scotland had a breakdown and a clearing party, which would be pretty much suitable or sufficient, I should say, for almost every other international team, it just didn't do the job. Mm. You know, if you're playing South Africa, I think you probably need to keep the ball alive more, or you need to make sure that you recycle that ball so quick it's just not part of the game. That's how good they are.
Mm. And their body height, which was a point that I made, I think, last week, but it was because of a point made by Ross Tucker that Nienaber, as a former physio, is someone that's really got on board with a kind of body position, low tackle height and low engagement on a ruck.
Mm.
And it's something that you see to their benefit. They use that body angles, body position, I think, better than any other team. And it's something I'm kind of keeping an eye on at the moment.
I don't know about you, Phil, or you, Tim, but I find clearing rucks really hard. Like, if I've got a guy jackling on the ball, I find it almost impossible to move him.
It depends where he's jackling. Which is something that we see occasionally, and I think should be banned. If they're hooked onto a player, like Marchand won a penalty against...
The old Tom Curry hook.
Yeah, Marchand, yeah. hooked an arm under, I can't remember, it might have been Ardi Surveyor. So you're then doubling the body weight that you're trying to clear. That becomes an impossibility.
Yeah, so on that one... Oh, hang on, we're going to get too technical here. But like, if you've got one dynamic movement to place the ball and you decide to squeeze ball it and you get caught with the ball under your torso, you deserve a penalty against you. If that guy is trying to... So the hook, I think, is perfectly legitimate. That should be a penalty anyway.
Only in a squeeze ball situation, though.
How else? I see what you mean. So he's present. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If he goes long... If you go long...
Yeah, and then you still hook.
You hook. That's the penalties against the jackler.
But then, if you're clearing... You always latch onto the player, so you do have double the body weight the other way. Always.
But latch onto...
So there's a guy on the floor.
Right? If you're the first man there as the supporting attacker...
You grab his shorts and you effectively give him, for all schoolboys out there, an atomic wedge.
Yeah, yeah.
For all times. And as the South Africans clear you, you are dragging this poor sap. Like, he's eating grass and he's also got an arse full of shorts.
Way too technical.
Just on a bigger point on the... Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, go on, Tim.
I was going to say, just on the breakdown in this game, just more broadly, that we've talked about this before, there is definitely a difference in the way that Southern Hemisphere and Northern Hemisphere referees officiate this, and Scotland did not deal with it. Because I was watching it, and to me, acclimatised with Northern Hemisphere rugby, Six Nations, Premiership, etc., I was thinking, this is wild at the breakdown. Angus Gardner is letting so much go. There are bodies lying all over the place. There's clearly hands on the floor beyond the ball before they go for the turnover, and he's just going crack on. And at first I was sort of thinking, like, this isn't fair, this isn't right. But actually, no, that is rugby, and this is going back to the point of officiating. I want the accountability with the ref, and I don't mind different interpretations, and the best teams are the ones that deal with it.
Yeah.
And Scotland just did not adjust.
No. And more importantly, I think they didn't really play any of their fancy stuff, did they? There was no...
Well, they didn't get the...
They didn't.
They weren't allowed to.
Yeah, this is the frustration that... I mean, Scotland only ran 200 metres, 220 metres with ball in hand.
How do you beat South Africa?
Which is un-Scotland-esque. And it's actually... It's less... So Scotland managed to run less metres with ball in hand than England did against Argentina.
It's impressive.
And England were explicitly trying not to run the ball. Whereas Scotland were...
When you put it like that, Phil.
Scotland were actually trying to run the ball.
How do you beat South Africa? And judging by this performance, what is your best tactic? If you're going to beat them, what do you do?
I don't necessarily think a tactic like England is a bad option. You kind of got to go one or two ways. You got to kick and try and shut down and force errors, or do a lot of running and try and tire them out.
Yeah. So old South Africa teams, and this is now a cliche. Go on, Tim. Sorry.
I was going to say, just my short solution to that, if I were a coach trying to set up a team play South Africa, I think you've got to go heavy at the breakdown because the transition turnover ball, that's where Scotland nearly scored. That's where New Zealand carved them up in the Rugby Championship first game, is they won those collision turnover moments and then had breakaway scores.
Well, it's an area of the game which is so incredibly unsexy that I can't even tell you who the best ruck... I can tell you who the best ruck disruptors are. I can't tell you who the best ruck looker-afters are.
Protectors.
The ruck protectors. Sure, no, looker-afters is far
more better. I bet you it's the Irish, because I was going to say it'll be the team that have the quickest ball.
Yeah,
it'll
maybe.
It'll probably be Armani and Tyburn. Probably be Tyburn.
And surely it's a poacher-turned-gamekeeper-type situation. Like the guys, the best disruptors, will also, if you turn their hand to but protectoring...
If that was the case, wouldn't, like, offensive linemen be also the best defensive linemen, and vice versa?
Probably a more broad skill.
Yeah, maybe.
Bending over and being hard to move.
Yeah, I guess so. So, I don't know who the best ruck protectors are, so I imagine you'd need a team full of them. Well, they just don't get any plaudits, do they? Like, you never see the BT highlights on the weekend, like, look.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Get this ruck protection.
Well, it's the kind of... The one that's famous for this, it's going back 20 years, is Richard Hill.
Richard Hill, yeah. The unseen work.
Yeah. And there's probably loads of other guys who do amazing things like that. But Richard Hill is the one that always gets the plaudits. Whether it's true or not, I have no idea.
I imagine someone like Charlie Yule's been really good at this. That's why he's in the team week in, week out, and we have no idea.
Well, he's got to be good at something.
Yeah, it must be that, ruck protecting.
Well, yeah, that's it. I was going to say, if there's a player that is picked consistently and doesn't appear to do anything, as in they don't do anything with the ball themselves or appear to, then they're probably doing exactly the job you talk about. And I was going to say exactly what you said, JB, probably Charlie Yules.
Charlie Yules. So if you want to beat South Africa, we all agreed, Charlie Yules.
Perfect.
Yep. And yeah, the solution done. You never expected
it's
to hear.
South Africa, it is over.
Get me Yules on the phone. So, yeah, it was disappointing. I do agree that you need to apply pressure to South Africa. I know it's a cliche now. The problem with that is some of the talent that they can field.
Oh.
It's just remarkable.
Field and bring off the bench.
Yeah. Oh. And we're not even talking about the forwards. I mean, I'm talking about, like... And is it Andrisi? How the hell do I say his name?
Arendse.
Yeah. Amazing. I can't believe that 4 years after dominating England, what's his name is still... why can't I remember names?
Makazole Mapimpi.
No, he didn't even play.
No.
It was Colby.
That's what I mean. I thought that's what you were saying.
Oh, right, yeah. So 4 years Colby? After... Yeah, so yeah. Right, fast men and men are slowed down. Charles and Colby's not slowed down one bit.
He's still in his prime, isn't he?
I don't know. He's still in his monetary prime.
He's 29.
Yeah.
So, well, monetary prime, he'll turn 30 around the World Cup final. Tim, can you tell me what date the World Cup final is?
October the 28th.
Yes.
That is convenient. His 30th birthday is the 28th of October.
Mm. Oh, there you go.
Mm.
Yeah. Wonderful.
What a birthday present.
Yeah, and on the bench, I mean, my word. Grant Williams... having him come on, he's so fast.
Yeah.
He's so bloody fast. That
was, God, that, his wheels are unreal.
Oh, my
that
word.
Break outside the... well, from his own 22 was ace. And it, South Africa have got this back line that's obviously pretty solid, but the amount of pace, there's half a dozen guys in that back line, including the bench, that if one of them gets a sniff at a running, like for them, see, Aransi, Jesse Creel is rapid, Cheslin Kolbe, Libok is rapid, well, Rob Williams is rapid.
I was thinking of
Moody could come back in.
Moody's the one I'm thinking
potentially
of.
As well, make it even faster.
Yeah, if Moody, God, they're so fast.
I guess you need Jesse. Who does Jesse Creel remind you of? So I think, like, why is he so good?
Don't know.
Not Jesse Creel, sorry, sorry,
what
sorry.
What else with, like, 3% body fat?
Sorry, I'm not talking about Jesse Creel. Damien Dialande.
Dialande.
Who does he... Because he seems like, in some ways, utterly unremarkable in what he does. Like, who is the closest thing to Damien Dialande?
Marnonu.
I was thinking Brad Barrett. Like, so solid in defence, goes forward. I mean, get rid of the solid in defence, as in a crash ball centre, maybe a Radrounder, but more about him later. like, he's just like, he's the sort of the odd one out. So him and Esterhazen, I mean, Esterhazen can also play a bit.
He can.
I mean, I'm sure Dialande can play a bit.
Can play a
but
bit.
Like, just, you know, he does stand out, doesn't he, as like the one who isn't as explosive as all the others.
He was the one
but
who
critical.
He beat the most defenders this week.
No, he didn't.
He did.
That's incredible.
More than Aransi, more than Kolbe, more than Willemse, more than Creel. More than Jasper Visa.
Wow.
More than anyone in Scotland, because no one in Scotland ran at all with the ball in hand.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Yeah, all week we've been building up the Scottish backline, rightly so. Somehow we've overlooked... It's kind of like Ronaldo not being given credit for heading the ball in his early days. Yeah, South Africa are massive. They're also rapid.
They are.
Good luck, everybody. Good luck.
On to Wales. JB,
you're... Oh, sorry. Just on Semi Radrandra. Who in South Africa reminds you of Semi Radrandra and how they play, minus the errors?
Minus the errors, Jasper Visa,
Orgy Snyman. He does honestly, but maybe better. Like, runs the line, takes contact, offloads the ball beautifully. Two immense offloads.
Do you...
if Radrandra had done that, we'd be all raving about what a world class story is.
Radrandra, so obviously we're transitioning to the Wales-Fiji game, but Radrandra, he is... Do you remember years ago, absolutely years ago, we did like a little section on the worst wingers in space, or like wingers that are no good in space.
Did we do this?
We did this, like Sean Lamont and... Who was the other big... Nicky Walker...
I try to think of Nicky Walker. He played for Ospreys.
Yeah.
Crikey.
These big, enormous wingers who, when they get open field, look for contact. Kind of like Jamie Roberts.
Yeah, good on paper.
Well, the kind of guys who are going to make 3 yards, whether they've got 30 yards of space in front of them or they've got a brick wall in front of them.
Yeah, 3 yards no matter what. Jamie Roberts.
Yes. Radrandra has this thing where, and he did it to, I think it was George Ford last week, and he did it to maybe Gareth Davis this week, where he gets the ball in space, and instead of actually looking for the space, he just wants to run over someone.
Yeah.
And runs over and just basically hits.
Would
him,
you
hits
say he plays 12 a little bit like an 8?
He plays 12 like Jamie Roberts.
He plays 12 like Bill Matter.
But, yeah. Or Jasper Visa.
Yeah, Bill Matter and Jasper Visa and Semi Radrandra are all interchangeable, as is RG Snyman, in my opinion.
So your boys won, JB?
Yeah, I've got to say, mixed emotions on this. When they came out, I did feel a little twinge. Like, I kind of want them to do well, but I also want them to lose. But, you know, just putting aside rooting interest, I love this game. I just sat up and I was watching it with my wife, who does not watch rugby at all. She actually said two things of interest this week. All week.
Not just in the 80 minutes.
All week.
You're watching the game.
First one was, she said, who's on comms? This is the Scotland game. So he's really good. It was Jim Hamilton. Like, completely unprompted. Who is on comms? He's really good. And the other one was, she's watching this and it's like, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
This was an unbelievable game.
And it just unstructured, and Wales fell for every trap that Fiji laid, but unfortunately they wriggled out of it. And it was remarkable to see, actually, because Wales would do... I don't know. There was some discussion on one of our WhatsApp groups, like, was the idea for Wales to actually play it from everywhere and try and get on the edge of Fiji? If that was the case, I can see evidence of it. But I can't imagine it was. I can't imagine playing Fiji at Fiji's... I don't know.
So one telling stat in this, Wales recorded 253 tackles in this game.
Yeah.
Which was nearly four times the number of tackles that Fiji only completed 70. So Wales 253 versus 70 from Fiji. Just an absolutely remarkable stat. So they tried to play turnover ball, but to get turnover ball, they had to defend so much. So the tactics
we'll
seem to
teach
be
them.
Just absorb as much pressure as you possibly can in order to eventually get some turnover ball.
To be fair, that is the kind of counterintuitive thinking which does make Gatland a genius. The idea of giving Fiji any ball, in my mind, is nonsense.
Yeah.
Absolute categorical nonsense. He did win this game, and for that he deserves a lot of credit, because, you know, Fiji, I mean, Radranda's drop at the end would be one. They had at least one, maybe, was it two disallowed tries? I remember...
There was the double movement.
Oh, yeah, the double movement, and then the guy jumps at... Oh, and Botian knocks it on.
Double movement, double movement. Eroni Marwi diving for the line, and the ref, Matt Carley, said it's to try on field unless you can see it overturned. And there was the...
Botia.
The TMO said it was it Ben Whitehouse said... No, it can't be Ben Whitehouse. He's Welsh. He was in a different game. Anyway, the TMO said, no, he didn't ground it. I can't see a clear grounding or whatever. And then they looked at was Eroni Marwi hit by an illegal tackle? And in the case of Elias and Rowlands, they said that both were legitimate tackles. All of those things are debatable.
Yes. I would agree with all of that. But it was, and it's the kind of thing that only Carly will pick up. His knee hit the floor, and then he propelled himself forward, and then he tried to reach out.
I have no problem with that decision. I mean, look, it's unfortunate.
Most referees would have...
Let that go.
Yeah, but yeah.
Look, if you know anything about rugby, you know Matt Carley knows his laws inside out.
Absolutely.
Probably too much. He's the tax inspector, which will get you for, you know, one day over the deadline for tax return. That's who he is.
He would be going wild if some of the, like, lack of replays around tries, particularly around forward passes, that wouldn't happen on Matt Carley's watch.
No, it would not. No, it would not.
Show me the last pass. Show me it from every single angle.
Yeah, he's very good like that, and like he's just different.
Well, you've got to know him. If you know you've got Matt Carley reffing, you know that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And so I'm not on Twitter at all, really. Not even on our Twitter, because I've forgotten the password. But I have heard rumours floating around that people are not happy with his performance. All I can tell you is what I saw from that game, and I did not come away thinking he'd mistreated Fiji in any way.
No, I think it was one of the... So, let's just make these points in order. Is one of the best spectacles, it's the best game we've had in the World Cup.
Yep.
One of the best games I've watched for years, and the referee always plays a part in that.
Yep.
I will say I thought he was too quick to give a yellow card to Fiji and not quick enough. Wales seemed to get far more chances infringed in the red zone. Would be my one criticism.
When he called Jack Morgan
three
over...
Three warnings in the same sequence.
Yeah, when he called Jack Morgan over, I did get angry on that. I thought that's a yellow card.
Yeah.
That's a yellow card. Stone. I mean, that should... When yellow cards are for those sort of things, they're not for, you know, these silly head infringements, which are saying, they're for technical infringements in the red zone. You should give yellow cards almost immediately, in my mind. So I agree with that. And actually, as we're on Matt Carley, there was a little bit of a deviation from the theme which we just set out there, which is he did let a lot of high shots go. An awful lot of high shots go.
Yeah, which was a point we made earlier. There was And that I think is more, I made the point around referees will subconsciously know there's less pressure on them to make a decision, therefore they'll just leave it for the bunker.
Yeah.
But then if it's not getting picked up by the bunker, the referees need to start making decisions, especially when you've got the level of inconsistency that we've seen already in 3 days of games.
But, you know, these were the sort of high shots which need to come back. So you got high shots which we don't want to see. We all know what they look like, and we don't want to see them. So I agree with that. But there was one which I can't remember which team infringed. I'm going to guess it was Wales that did this because I was supporting Fiji and I was angry about it. But the player starts low, comes high, rides over the shoulders, clips the back of the head like a sort of horse collary type thing, which is definitely 100% like a seatbelty type thing. That is a penalty. Just was never called. And it was really obvious because it's on a kick return or something.
Hmm.
And I thought, well, that's unusual. But then the game benefited from it because why do you want a penalty there? You want them running it back. You want them doing all these bits and pieces. So I thought we handled the game beautifully, actually, and I think proof is in the pudding. The game was a great spectacle. It's a beautiful game of rugby.
Hell of a game.
See what Dylan Hartley said?
I did not. What did Dylan Hartley say? What did Dylan say?
Dylan Hartley said, and I don't like picking on particular referees. So that's why I'm happy to talk about the general officiating and World Rugby's administration of the system and the processes. So I don't want this to be any sort of Matt Carley, but basically Dylan Hartley said that Fiji lost that game because of their cultural humility and basically politeness.
Shut up.
Means that they weren't chopsing at the referee, and so they make it easier for referees to have 50-50 marginal stuff go
Fiji
against
lost
them.
That game.
Hold on.
Sorry, go on.
Cast it off, what I would say is, what you got to remember is Dylan Hartley speaking from a position of someone who was constantly chopped in at a referee, was an international captain, and you were talking about how you want your pundits and commentators the other week to have been there and done it. I don't think you can just discount and go rubbish to someone who's been there and done it. I think it's at least worth merits a conversation.
All right, so the first point I'm going to make is, it is entirely possible that Fiji could have manipulated the ref more, and I'm all for that, go for it. But the reason they lost the game is not because of chopsing the ref. They lost it because Bottier dropped the ball, because Maui dropped the ball, because Radranda dropped the ball, and because they had a disallowed try. That's why they lost it. You know, so you just get one of those scores, you kick it, and you know, you're ahead on the scoreboard. So all the chopsing.
I think is an interesting point about what Dylan Hartley brought up. The broader conversation, I think, that's quite interesting. Is I noticed, I don't know where, because I was listening to a ref feed for some of the games. That wasn't with no commentary. So I don't know whether you miss some of it when there's the commentary happening over the top, but I understand the stakes are really high. This is a World Cup. Some of these games this weekend were so important.
Mm.
I'm a bit uncomfortable with how players are talking to referees and how referees are just kind of letting it go. And I do wonder if the sum total of all of that does add pressure and may manifest itself in stuff going one way or the other, which is only going to incentivize players doing it more.
The thing is, it goes both ways, Tim, right? And I think you are right to point out my hypocrisy in saying that, look, you want people who've done it and experienced it. Here's a guy, listen to what he says. So I kind of take that. On the other hand, I bet Dylan Hartley was a far different captain to the Dylan Hartley that called the referee a cheat, and the guy that got red carded God knows how many times in his formative years. And I think chopsing can work. Yeah. I do think that. But I also think that it goes both ways. So if you take it too far, you will be on the back foot and the referee will ping you off the park. It's a very, very fine line to draw. If you're not naturally drawn to that style of manipulating the ref, I wouldn't advise that you do it. In fact, the way that I manipulate refs has been incredibly nice to them and letting the other team do the mouthing off. I want to be communicating with the ref at all times. So it depends what style Fiji want, really.
I'm sure Phil's got something to say on this. I'll just quickly say, this probably does highlight something which is easy to overlook, that whilst, you know, Semi Randrandra, Lavani Botti or whatever were under massive pressure when they were trying to execute a skill, the pressure these referees are under is immense.
Mm.
Yeah,
it is. And it is a thankless task because you rarely get praised when you have a great game. but you always get criticised. Actually, you get criticised by both sets of fans, regardless of whether you have a good game or bad game.
Yeah.
I was going to make the point in the South Africa game. You might have picked this up better than we did, Tim, if you had a ref mic on, where Angus Gardner did, he kind of pushed back very strongly at one of the South African players talking to him, sent them away, only to realise it was Bongi Mbanambi who'd been made on-field captain at the time.
So he apologised to me all the time.
Yeah, he did. That was funny.
He massively apologised. And fair play to him, because fair play to him for both sides, actually. If he hadn't been told he's captain and there's a player talking to him and he sends them away, I'm very happy with that. Like, I'm kind of with you, Tim. I don't want to see too much chops in. But fair play for kind of immediately eating humble pie when he realised he was the one that got it wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Agreed.
Funny moment.
Anything else on... Well, no, there's loads to bloody digest in the Wales game.
Oh, the Josh Adams hit.
That was great, wasn't it?
What a hit.
I just felt like, for whatever reason it was, everyone on that pitch felt a lot of freedom to play.
They did.
A lot of freedom to play.
Thank Matt Carley.
Yeah. And the more I think about it, the more of an amazing win this is for Wales. Because when Fiji started emptying that bench, like, you don't really think of Tier 2 nations, so-called Tier 2 nations. Someone's going to regret calling them that. As like bringing on a strong set of finishers. But my word, Bottier comes on. A guy, I can't remember his name, the guy's played four World Cups.
Tuasova.
And then, of course, Tuasova. And, you know, I couldn't help but put on my CrossFit group, like, you have to look at this guy's quads.
Tuasova isn't... He's in unbelievable shape.
And, like, how many times...
His calves, I've never admired a man's calves like I admire Joshua Tuasova's.
Incredible.
His calves are bigger than my quads. They're massive.
Yeah. And, like, every time he was near the line...
He's a freak.
I was just shouting, give it to Tuasova. Give it to Tuasova. I mean, he's so massive and so destructive, he puts Radrana on the wing. You know, and they do the same thing. They do exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So. I can't remember if it was Tuasova that was outside. I don't think it was. But this is the one thing with the whole Semirandranda drop. Let's just get onto that briefly. There's a couple of things overlooked in this. Had he picked it up and scored, it was a touchline kick to win the game. It wasn't to win the game itself. And I, without Caleb Munts, I don't think Fiji are winning that game anyway.
I think they are, Tim. I just think they are.
And secondly, I mean, yes, it was a drop and Randrandra his face. That was. Oh my god! Human to human.
That's heartbroken for him.
The close up on his face. What a place to be for any rugby player in that moment. But the other thing is, like, there was no need to throw a miss three.
Yeah. There absolutely was. What are you talking about?
Miss three, bounce pass.
That was exactly the right option. I can't believe you're saying this.
It was Joshua Tuasova. What is he better? He was the one who threw the pass. What is he better at? running straight 15 yards out from the line.
But let's just make the counter argument here. The whole point of Joshua Tuasova, much like the whole point of Jamie Roberts, is the fact that he attracts players in.
Yeah, like, not when if he's got the ball, other people can distribute. When they've got the ball and he attracts players in.
I mean, I know exactly what you're saying, but it was the right option.
Even if he wanted the threat of him to draw the defenders in, he had someone immediately to his left who would have more than likely run it in.
What are we talking about?
Much, much more.
All Radrandra needed to do is walk it in. That's all he needed. It was the right pass.
So I'm making the double point. There was an easier pass that required less skill to pass and to catch. And it would have been in an eminently more kickable position, which Fiji were unlikely to win that game, even if Randrandra had scored.
Well, look, Fiji had been smashing the door down against Wales for quite some time with not much success. And the one time that they go wide, because Wales would have been looking at that thinking, crikey, they are coming hard and tight on us continuously. I thought that option of the pass was absolutely brilliant and ballsy considering where it was. You know, you're in a World Cup. The minimum that you expect from your World Cup winger is to catch the ball. Just catch the ball and walk. I mean, he's a finisher. That's the whole point of a winger, is he is a finisher. Now, in Radrandra's case, he isn't a finisher, but he does play a lot, he has played a lot of wing. I thought it was a great option and, you know, just one of those things. But, you know, they wouldn't have needed to do it at all, would they, if they'd have scored one of the four tries prior to that?
100%. Yeah. You can't complain about one drop if you miss
drop
your,
three others.
Miss your kick, drop three others, disallowed try, etc., etc.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it's not because I mean, Fiji are kind of everyone's second favourite team generally, but I want them to win at the weekend against Australia, which really, look at the fixtures. That's the only game that really is interesting beyond just kind of watching rugby that is a World Cup game. I don't feel any jeopardy about any other fixture particularly except for Australia Fiji.
Yeah, should we go through the fixtures now quickly?
Well, yeah, I'll just make the point before you do that if Fiji don't beat Australia, Paul C fizzles right out, and what was only a few days ago, we were calling it a group of death and stuff, could be kind of over as a narrative, really, except for the Wales Australia deciding who's top.
Or the only other shot is Georgia v Wales. If Georgia beat Wales, regardless of the Fiji-Australia result, it is back on for that second place.
Fair. Yeah. And Fiji do have 2 bonus points out of the game against Wales. So
yeah, good point.
That's a fair point.
So the fixtures this weekend, we have a Thursday night game. Ooh. Thursday night, 8 o'clock, British summertime. 9 o'clock for Tim's continental time. It's France hosting Uruguay.
Okay.
Which, Uruguay are a good team.
However,
they are not going to beat France.
They are not.
We then have Friday night, 8 o'clock.
Oh, wait. Great game for Uruguay, though.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, to be
great game to test themselves on the biggest stage.
To have every eyeball in France against the French national team on a Thursday night. That's pretty cool. Because probably the gear. Well, what would they expect their World Cup experience to be like? Like one big team on a Sunday, sandwiched between two other teams, and then hopefully get some joy against another tier two. This is awesome.
It is awesome. The biggest show in the world on Thursday night. Friday, 8 o'clock, we've got New Zealand against Namibia, which will be a...
just no point in that.
60, 70, 80 point win.
Yep.
Saturday, we've got 3 games. At 2 o'clock, Samoa versus Chile. Now, I think this is going to be a good game.
That will be a good game.
I'm backing Chile to do better than they did against Japan. I think they'll correct a few errors, but I think Samoa will win that. That's in Pool D, England's pool. Then we've got a 4:45 in Pool C, Wales v Portugal, which will be a fairly routine win for Wales. And then Pool B, JB, you'll be interested in this one. I think it will be a fairly routine win, but certainly a 20-point win. Ireland against Tonga.
I will be interested in that one. I would love Tonga to win this.
Do you think it's going to happen?
I think there is always a puncher's chance.
I know Tonga have had more time together, but unless they have somehow got over the fact that they basically were, when we watched them less than 12 months ago, they were like a bunch of blokes, incredibly big and talented blokes, who look like they've never met each other before, against maybe the world's most cohesive international team. That is a problem.
Yes. Well, I just say they need to look at their Pacific Island compatriots in Samoa to see how they went. So it's doable. You know, it's doable. And if Ireland have got even half an eye on South Africa or Scotland and they pick a slightly weakened squad, you never know. You never, never know. But I tend to agree with you. The chances of Tonga winning are 5%?
Yeah.
1 in 20?
Maybe less than that. Maybe 1 in 50. Yeah.
I'd say more like go along with that.
But it doesn't mean I won't be backing Tonga. Oh, by the way, it occurred to me on Sunday that I have both a Chile shirt.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Who gave us that?
We have a Chile shirt.
Well, it's on my wall, so 90% of the law and all that.
Do you not remember the chat? I can't remember his name, who travelled out to Madrid.
I do remember.
From Santiago, Chile. I'm sure it began with an R. Rodrigo?
Yeah, I was thinking R as well.
Sounds right.
Not Roberto. Wasn't Roberto, was it?
Well, anyway, his Chile shirt. I nearly got it down, but they're all sort of like, all very well presented now.
They are.
So I didn't wear my Chile shirt.
Yeah, you've butchered my beautiful Japan shirt.
I haven't. It looks great there. It's all.
It's got holes in it now.
Oh, it's got some small holes, but nothing big. It sits proudly between a Benetton shirt and, do you know the other shirt it sits next to?
I do. What a shirt that is. That's a magnificent shirt.
Yeah, Tim will hate
this. Miles Benjamin?
No, Tim will hate this shirt.
Not the Benjamin. Where's Ben? Benjamin's just above JB.
It is a shirt of your mortal enemies, Tim.
It's got some wheat, a rose, a duck, a beehive, is that?
It is.
Oh, Aylesbury.
Yeah, your mortal enemies, Tim. Aylesbury. So, it's sat next to the... sat between Benetton and Aylesbury.
Three nice striped shirts there. Japan, Benetton, Aylesbury.
Yeah, I've got real flair for hanging these shirts up in my basement, I've got to say.
Final games on Sunday. Is it the final? Nothing on Monday? Yeah, nothing on Monday. On Sunday, 2 o'clock, we've got a slightly one-sided South Africa against Romania, who will be competing to see whether they can put more than the 80 points that Ireland put on them.
That is the issue, because it's both a blessing and a curse. The blessing for all of us is that Paul B, nothing is decided, nothing is any closer to being decided by the fact Scotland lost, because South Africa could quite comfortably lose to Ireland, and Ireland could lose to Scotland, and then it's all game on, and it's on. So that's the blessing. The curse is that means everyone needs points, so Romania are getting battered.
This is going to be another 80 point victory for South Africa. So that's the 2 o'clock game in Pool B, 4:45 in Pool C, the biggest game of the weekend, Australia versus Fiji.
4:45 on Sunday.
Sunday, yeah. 4:45 Sunday. And then
this is knockout for Fiji starting now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Hope Fiji win. God, I hope Fiji win this.
Yeah, and if Fiji don't win this, it is out of their hands. They've then got to hope that Georgia do them a favour against Wales, and then they beat Georgia, and then that's Fiji's only route to getting out. But I think Australia will win.
I think so as well.
I think so.
I just think Eddie Jones is so wily. I don't think this Australia team is nearly as bad as what it looked in the championship. I think they'll find a way to win. And also, Fiji won't be a surprise to them either. That's the biggest one. They know what these lads are because they play them in their domestic rugby. They get exposure to them. Wales don't get exposure to any Fijian rugby.
Come on. Don't tell me Wales didn't know that Niall Afeifu is a physical freak who could bust out of a tackle and score from 40 metres.
Look, I can tell you how hard and how quick Mike Tyson punches every day of the year for 6 years. But if you don't spar with the guy, you're never going to have a clue what it feels like.
So Australia will know. Australia missing Tate McDermott, who tackled too low.
Yep.
Tackled into someone's knee. I can't remember whose knee it was.
Need to ban these low tackles.
Exactly.
But just ban them all. Ban them all.
Touch rugby.
Touch rugby. Perfect.
And then final game on Sunday.
I want a new tackle height law for next season above mid-thigh only.
Oh, although you could get a yellow card for a thigh tackle, as we found out in Chile. So a little bit dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Above mid... yeah, exactly.
Targeting the thigh. Never a good look, is it? Dirty player.
Target the breadbasket.
Yeah.
But not the nether regions.
Correct.
Got to miss the low blow.
So hang on.
So final game.
Yeah.
So hold on. We've got mid thigh to upper thigh only.
But with a gap.
And then we've got waist to sternum. Those two zones. Everything else is out.
Correct.
Right. Good.
Final game in round two, game week two, whatever you want to call it. Pool D, England against Japan, 8 o'clock Sunday night.
Oh, Christ, that is good.
Yeah, so that's
Japan.
Probably the third best game of the weekend.
You say it's good, but that does mean... I mean, it means I'm going to have to be... I'll be up like after midnight, just before the rugby's done, before I can actually just sort of sit back with a beer or anything. And then in the morning, the bloody breakfast shows on the TalkSport breakfast show will want to talk about it because it was on the night before. So
it's a tough life for you, Tim Cocker.
I might just have to stay up, just power through in Nice. I can't remember where we ended up, JP, but there was some places that were popping a little bit late on, weren't there?
In Nice, yeah, we had a great time. That is one of my favourite days boozing. That is phenomenal.
Although when we went the year after, we went back to Nice at about 3 a.m. on the Sunday night and nothing was open.
No.
We got a taxi to €100 taxi from Monaco to Nice and tried to get him to take us to the most lively place in Nice.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
There was no lively place in Nice at 3 a.m. on a Sunday, or Monday morning, I guess it was.
Pathetic.
There was a few boulangeries gearing up for their Monday morning trade.
Yes, that's right.
Firing the ovens up.
But no, oh no, is this a different trip, or was this like World Rugby Award?
Yeah, this was the second, the one that I came to, the World Rugby Awards, where the three of us left the Monaco Casino. Yeah,
after we left them.
Yeah, so the first one.
As we got a taxi, Finn Russell was stood outside the hotel.
Yeah, and the eight who got lost.
The eight that got lost?
Yeah, he had the epic trip to get back from Twickenham.
Oh.
Glasgow number eight. I don't know what he's up to nowadays.
Ryan.
Oh, the number eight. Oh, no, that's the Ryan, number eight. Yeah, the London Scottish guy. All right, mate, how's it going?
Yeah, Ryan Wilson.
Ryan Wilson. That's
Ryan Wilson, that's it.
Very much a flash in the pan, him. Whatever happened to him? We'll work
it out. Grassroots podcaster.
Yeah, grassroots podcaster.
Yeah, we'll work it out another time. Okay, so I think Japan. Anyone else going not Japan?
I'm not going Japan.
There's no way.
It'd be a nice contrast of styles. One team actually wants to play with the ball and one team explicitly does not want to play the ball.
Japan showed me nothing against Chile that really makes me think they'll bother England.
No.
Nothing.
I tend to agree, and I think this Japan team is weaker than either the 2015 or 2019 Japan teams, unfortunately.
Yeah, agreed on that. Right. Okay, so I'm going to wrap this up now. Unless either of you got anything to say.
Done.
Now, unbelievably, this is not our last podcast of the week, because there's going to be another one straight after this. Download it, because it might not be the thing you want to listen to during the World Cup, but it's a topic that I think will go underreported. Which is, I think, in the next couple of weeks, England are going to negotiate with PRL and we're going to have a disastrous new deal. And it's all going to be Bill Sweeney's fault. So find out what Bill Sweeney is gambling with this week in our next podcast.
Perfect.
Excellent. Right. Me, Tim and Phil. See you later. Bye.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.